circulated to you, authored by concerned groups. It has no status in this meeting. We don't deal with things without knowing who are the authors. So will you please return it to Mr. Sia, who is standing over there, lest we get rumors circulated about other people.
So may I address you on that? I see the letter is addressed to the chairperson of the Justice Committee. I read it, and there's some very serious issues here, and it's not for this meeting. But clearly we need to prepare for this afternoon meeting, so I don't see any reason why we should hand it in. I would think that that it is an issue that we need to deliberate on, how to deal with this document. It comes from concerned members, but obviously for us to prepare, we need to be aware of this document that is addressed to you and to the committee. So, Chair, we need to understand to take it back at this stage.
It was just drawn to my attention now. I didn't authorize its distribution. And I think Parliament promotes transparency. Any member of the public has the right to raise any issue with us. But if people don't disclose their agency, their identity, but they are blaming other people, and how do the other people respond to things that have no authors? So, but we can deal with that elsewhere. For today, let's focus on the business. Are we all ready, Advocate Musana? Can we give you the floor?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, good morning, as well as the members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present our annual report 2013-2014, as well as our current performance up to August before yourselves. Chair, may I quickly introduce my team that I have with me today. I have on my left Dr. Amaide, who is the head of the National Prosecution Services. And next to him is Advocate Mahatla, who is the head of the National Specialized Services Division. And next to her, I have Mr. Willie Hofmeyer, who is the head of the Asset Officer Unit. Let's go by the sequence of sitting. And I have Ms. Tao, who is the manager of performance and evaluation. Next to her is the CEO, Advocate Karen van Rensburg. And I have Mrs. Van Zee, who is our acting chief executive finance. And then on the far left is the deputy CEO, Ms. Beryl Sisulu. Then behind me, I have the DPP South Gauteng, Advocate Chauke. Next to him is DPP North Gauteng, Advocate Mzinyati. And next to him, I have the Destination Director, Advocate Diva. And sitting next to her is Ms. Akeke, who is our Chief Executive Communications. Thank you, and from the outset, let me apologize, Chair, for the slight changes in our presentation. We have circulated the documents as far as we could. We didn't have enough copies. But those changes only relate to, as you are aware, that we'll be presenting the annual report 2013-2014 together with the performance 2014-2015 up to August. What we have done is we, as the presentation will be going on, the national directors responsible for those business units, like when we deal with the NPS, we will deal simultaneously with the annual report as well as the performance of the current year, instead of doing it in piecemeal. But I think as the presentation goes on, the the Deputy National Directors will refer the honored members to the relevant slides. The presentation was circulated simultaneously, and I take it that the members have familiarized themselves with it. I will then just give an overview. Slide page 1, I think, it deals with the heading. There is just a change of the heading there, which says annual report 2013, 2014, and 2014-2015 performance to August presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services. Then the overview and presentation deals with the vision, mission, strategic objectives. The overview of performance against targets and resources, and that is what we'll be presenting. Slide 3 deals with basically what is contained in the annual report, the vision, as it is there we took it straight from the annual report. Slide 4, it's the constitutional mandate in terms of both section 179, subsection 2 and section 179, subsection 4 of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. Slide 5, it's deals with legislative mandate, which is the National Prosecuting Authority Act. We say in terms of section 20, subsection 1 of the Act, the power vests in the prosecution authority to institute and conduct criminal proceedings on behalf of the state, carry out any necessary functions incidental to instituting and conducting such criminal proceedings, and discontinue criminal proceedings. Then we have this legislative, where we derive our legislative mandate, we use this act, which is the Criminal Procedure Act, POCA implementation of the Rome Statute, of the International Criminal Court Act, Witness Protection Act, Prevention of and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act, Criminal Law on Sexual Offences and Related Matters, Child Justice Act, and Prevention and Combating of Trafficking in Persons Act. Then slide 7, deals with the policy mandate in terms of the JCPS delivery agreement. The agreement requires the cluster to focus, as we know, on 7 expected outputs, of which the NPA contributes to the following outputs, which are 5 of them. 1, reduced overall levels of serious crime, in particular conduct and jail crimes. 2, a more effective criminal justice system, reduce corruption, manage and improve perceptions of crime among the population, and also to secure cyber crime. Whilst the National Development Plan identifies the following proposed priority areas relevant to the NPA, and in terms of Chapter 12 of the NDP, this will strengthen the criminal justice system to build safety using an integrated approach and build community participation in community safety. While Chapter 4 of the NDP deals with promoting accountability and fighting corruption. Then we have these sub-programs that the NPA deals with. The National Prosecution Services is primarily responsible for general prosecutions and the appeals that may follow, which includes resolving criminal matters outside the formal trial process through alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, settling admissions of guilt for minor offences and considering dockets brought by the police where persons have not been charged. The second one is the Specialized Prosecution Services, or the NSSD, which deals with property crimes litigation, sexual offences and community affairs, and specialized commercial crime. And we have also the Asset Forfeiture Unit, which uses assets that are the proceeds of crime and have been part of an offence through a criminal or civil process. We have also the Office for the Witness Protection, which provides for protection, support and related services to vulnerable and intimidated witnesses and related persons in judicial proceedings in terms of the Witness Protection Act 1996. And lastly, we have the support services, which basically provides corporate support services in terms of the finance, human resources, information, communication technology, supply chain, and risk management of the NPA. Then our strategic objectives are the following, that is, increase successful prosecution, improve successful prosecution of cases that require specialized prosecution, and to ensure that profit is removed from crime, and also to ensure threatened witnesses are successfully prosecuted, or protected, sorry. Then in terms of our, of the overview of performance, we deal with that under the following slides, slide 12, we say that we note that NPA achieved 64.3% of its 28 targets compared to 42% last year, and also 69% of its 13 estimates of national expenditure, the ENE targets. And we illustrate that by way of the graphs, both graphs. The first graph illustrates the, on the left-hand side, illustrates the 64.3% of its 20, of our 28 targets compared to 42% last year. And by narrative also, we, on the following slides, we deal with the overview performance. And we note the significant overall improvement in costs compared to previous year. 71% of performance indicators improved, and only 28.6% was not improved. And 92.3% of core ENE indicators improved. The NPAs had stretch targets that ranged between 2 to 100% increases on the actual performance of the previous year. Achievement of ENE targets, that is 9.3% as of that earlier on was achieved, while 7.7% which is marginal below target, and 23.1% not achieved. Achievement of all targets is illustrated in the graph, which is 64.3% achieved, while 7% marginal below target and 21% not achieved. There is a positive clearance ratio which was maintained. We have 931,799 new cases enrolled and 962,632 cases disposed of, which is a positive clearance rate of 3.3%. 30,833 more cases were disposed of than received. The ability of the NPA to finalize cases is dependent on the inflow of new cases coupled with efficient court utilization. During 2013-2014, a reduced inflow of cases was recorded in both regional and high courts. Court utilization was also reduced by 1.6%. As fewer court days were utilized, coupled with a marginal reduction in the average court hours. The NPA excelled by reducing the number of cases withdrawn from the court roll, whilst reduction also noted in the number of warrants issued for non-appearance by the accused. Fewer cases were also removed due to mental referrals. 1,323 sentence agreements were successfully concluded, comprising of 7,439 counts, which is 54% of these agreements, sentences imposed were direct imprisonment. The NPA ensured that the number of the Thuthuzela care centers operational sites providing services, which is in line with the verification criteria, increased from 35 to 38 by the end of 2013-2014. And we note also that no witnesses were harmed or threatened twice on the witness protection program, maintaining 11 years of excellent performance. 21 people were convicted of corruption, where the amount involved is more than 5 million rand. in the asset forfeiture unit had an excellent year and exceeded its previous best performance levels achieved in 3 to 5 years ago. We note the following challenges, however, that the case flow management remains a challenge and impact negatively on court performance. Fewer trial cases per day were placed on the court rolls with an inadequate number of backup cases. Postponement of cases due to the unavailability of other role pairs like the magistrates and the legal aid practitioners, and also the ineffective implementation of screening protocols in some regions. On the support service, the NPA spent 100% of its budget during the year under review, and the NPA also received a second clean audit. The NPA strategic plan 2014 to 2019, NPA annual performance plan 2014/15, the estimate the EME and adjustment NE were submitted within the prescribed time frames. The NPA extended its education and awareness initiatives to a TV broadcast called NPA for My Justice, and 67 aspirant prosecutors were recruited in 2013-2014. And then the tables below illustrate the performance against targets from slide 19, 20, 21 and 22, deal with the ENA targets and indicators 2013-2014, and the Deputy National Directors responsible for the respective areas will deal comprehensively in their presentation with these targets and indicators. Chair, may I then, with your leave, hand over to Dr. Amaite to do the presentation on the National Prosecution Services. That is slide from slide.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. The presentation with respect to the performance of the NPS begins on slide 23 of the original documents that were made available. The NPS is responsible for strategic objective 1 of the NPA out of the 4 strategic objectives, which is increased successful prosecution. On slide 23, we provide an indication of the performance against strategic objective. That strategic objective relates mainly to the number of criminal court cases finalized, including ADRM. In this respect, for the financial year 2013-2014, there has been an improvement, mainly as a result of the increased use of ADRM. We have indicated the targets there, as well as the actual. And if we move to slide 24, we give a more detailed narrative of the performance with respect to the number of criminal court cases finalized, and that would include AGRM. There was an 8.3 increase in criminal court cases, including AGRM. It's to 505,342 from 466,800. The finalization of cases, one of note, is dependent on the inflow of new cases and roles, coupled with efficient court utilization of all courts. During 2013-2014, there was a reduced inflow of cases which was recorded in both the regional as well as the high courts. We provide basically an indication of the variations there from the high court, regional court, district courts, as well as all the courts. Court utilization in all courts was reduced by 1.6, although utilization of court hours increased in both the regional and the high courts. And then, in slide 25, we provide an indication of performance against the various indicators that we have. They are set out there in the first column. The first one is the number of criminal court cases finalized with verdict. There has been a decrease, mainly due to reduced criminal court days during the financial year. In respect of all the performance indicators, there have been improvements. With respect to the number of criminal court cases finalized through ADRM, more cases were identified for diversion from the former criminal justice system. And with respect to conviction in the high court rates, there was also an improvement there, although conviction rates fluctuate from year to year. The reported performance is in line with the performance of previous years. With respect to conviction rates in the criminal courts, there was also an improvement there, although one must note that this fluctuates from time to time. And then the same with conviction rates in the district courts. And then the performance, again, the performance indicators continues on slide 23. Conviction rate 26, sorry. That's 26 on the original, deck. Conviction rate in the prosecution of sexual offenses, as reported at GCCs, there was an improvement there. And then conviction rate in organized crime as well as in trio crimes, there was a slight decrease, although it's not as worrying as to be of cause for concern. We shall endeavor to improve that as time goes on. And then conviction rate in sexual offenses, there was improvement as well as in cyber crime. Unfortunately, for certainly, with respect to the number of JCPS officials convicted of corruption, we're still struggling there. And then proceeding to slide 27, analysis on the number of criminal court cases finalized with verdict, we improved the number of cases finalized with verdict by 1.8%. And then there was a reduction in court days, which was also coupled with the unavailability of other role players. And this affected negatively on cases finalized with a verdict, as well as our inability to achieve our target. The district court improved on its performance by finalizing 2.7% more cases with a verdict than previously. And as performance in the regional court and high court decreased, with 1,215 and 1,568 cases finalized respectively, that both in the regional court as well as in the high court. And then slide number 28 is an indication of cases finalized through ADRM. We finalized 22.9% more cases through ADRM. Of the 176,189 cases finalized through ADRM, 3,485 or 1.9% of them were finalized in the regional courts and 98.1% finalized in the district courts. During the financial year 2013-14, 40,620 cases were diverted after enrollment, 6,355 cases were diverted before enrollment in terms of the Child Justice Act, 929,217 cases were successfully mediated on an informal basis. A breakdown is indicated in the table below. And then the next slide, slide 29, will provide an indication of diversions in terms of the Child Justice Act. 3.8% fewer children were diverted in terms of the Child Justice Act, as compared to 6,605 who were diverted during 2012 and 2013. The next slide provides an indication of conviction rate in the high court. The high conviction rate of 88.8% was maintained, with an improvement of 1.3% as compared to last year. And the number of verdict cases slightly decreased by 12.8% from 1,045 days to 8,790 days. Another factor which contributed to the delayed finalization of criminal cases was the significant increase in the number of formal bail applications and appeals finalized. And then conviction rates in the regional courts. A conviction rate of 76% was achieved with an improvement of 0.9% as compared to last year. Now this is one of the best ever recorded conviction rates by the NPA, especially for the regional courts. The courts finalized 39,283 cases, comprising of 85,848 verdict cases and 3,435 ADRM cases, representing a finalization rate of 0.5 cases per court per day. And this was mainly due to an screening processes which yielded positive results as 19.6% fewer cases were withdrawn. Then the next slide, conviction rates in the district courts. The high conviction rate were maintained. A conviction rate of 93.6% was achieved by all district courts. The court finalized 465,033 cases, comprising of 192,279 cases and 172,754 ADRM cases. And this represents a finalization rate of 2.7 cases per court day. Again, there was an end-screening process which yielded positive results. So once again, a fewer cases were withdrawn. And then conviction rate in respect of organized crime. The number of cases finalized increased significantly from previous year, from 301 to 403 organized crime cases finalized with a conviction rate of 88.9%. And this is exceptional as these cases are extremely complex in nature and also require specialist prosecution skills. And then conviction rate in trio crimes, a total of 1,899 cases comprising of 2,432 trio crime counts were finalized with a conviction rate of 84.1%. The NPA finalized 372, which translates 24.4% more trio crimes with 538 more trio crime counts compared to the previous year. A breakdown of conviction rate in the trio crimes is given in the table there. And then conviction rate in sexual offenses. Now this indicator is that the prosecution of cases in terms of the Sexual Offenses Act. The NPA finalized 1,082 more sexual offenses cases compared to the previous year. The conviction rate target of 66% was exceeded by 1.1%, and 815 more convictions were obtained compared to the previous year. And then the next slide, slide 35, the conviction rate in cybercrime prosecution. The court improved the prosecution of cybercrime cases by finalizing 211 cybercrime cases with a conviction rate of 94.8%. Compared to the previous year, the court finalized 73, which translates to 52.9% more cases. So we can see that we are at least now beginning to reap results from a special focus based on the skills development of prosecutors in respect of the prosecution of cybercrime. Then the next slide, slide 36, that is the number of JCCS officials convicted of corruption. 73, and this specifically focuses, it's only in respect of the NPA, excluding prosecutions in the FCCUB. The 73 JCCS officials were convicted of corruption, of which 54 were finalized by the NPS. Now, the most serious cases were finalized by the FCCU, and that was about 19. As we have mentioned there, we are not doing quite well, but we are trying to find ways of really improving our performance in that respect by a more focused approach. Departments involved included staff, 38 officials, Justice and Correctional Services now, 16 officials, Department of Defense and Military Veterans, 2 officials, Bafin Revenue Services, 2 officials, unfortunately, the NPA, 1 official, and EHA, 4 officials. And the final slide in respect of the performance for 2013-2014 is the court preparation project. The NPA, when I say the court preparation program, continues to prepare state witnesses for court in all matters, not only those related to sexual offenses. This work is to contribute towards the reduction of secondary traumatization. That actually contributes to the improvement of conviction rates. I might as well mention that they were actually instrumental in the preparation of witnesses in the Oscar Pistorius trial. The performance of the court preparation officer improved significantly over the last initial year. In 2013-14, 69.1 court preparation sessions were conducted on average a month compared to 64.4 court correction sessions in 2013. In 2013-14, 6,436 witnesses were assisted by court preparation officers compared to the 91,155 in 2012-2013. The number of witnesses under 18 assisted increased from 22,097 to 23,171. The court preparation officers prepared 2,952 victim impact statements in 2013-14. There was a significant increase in the assistance provided which related to sexual offences cases, increasing from 32,642 to 37,357. And to conclude, I propose, Chairperson, to proceed to performance report for the current financial year, that is for April 2014 to August 2014. Which is on slide 8, on slide 3, on slide 80 of the original document. Once again, we are at this for the current financial year on track. We have had more IQ successfully completed, successfully directed, and more suitable cases were identified for informal mediation. And if you then proceed to slide 81, it shows generally quite a good performance up to now. So we don't have any areas where we feel concerned. We are hopeful that if we continue with this trend, we should be able to report positive results in the next annual report. Then proceeding to the next slide, slide 82, the only instance where we haven't actually performed well is with respect to conviction rates in trio crimes. But again, we shall be keeping track of that. And that concludes my presentation for the MPS.
Thank you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this juncture, with your new chair, may I hand over to Advocate Mukhata to deal with the presentation in respect of the National Specialized Prosecution Services.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to deal with the old slides, starting from slide 38 to 46, then jump to 55, and then for April to today's performance, it will be on slides 83 to 84 of the old document. If we're looking at slide 38, the new document that is in front of you is on slide 45, which is up on the wall. It's dealing with objective 2 of the NPA strategy, which is improved successful prosecution of cases that require specialized prosecution. And we're talking there about specialized commercial crimes units. We are talking about the priority crime litigation division. We are talking about the sexual offenses and community affairs division. The conviction rate in complex commercial crimes, if you see the table on page 38, slide 38, it's 92.9% for the 12-13 year, and the target for 2013-14 was 94%, and the actual for 2013-14 financial year came to 95.8%. There was a deviation of 1.8%, which is green. We give comments on deviations on the side there that conviction rates do fluctuate, and I'm sure you've heard this earlier on that we've got that explanation that conviction rates will fluctuate depending on the number of the influx of cases and how much we clear. And then number two is the number of the operational TCCs, which the NDPP and Dr. Ramayi have already alluded to. We currently have 38 operational TCCs, which is an increase of 3 TCCs from the 2012-13 financial year. Might I add that we have, at the moment, 51 centers where we provide services for the TCCs. 15 of them are not fully operational, therefore not counting them in the 58. So all in all, we've got 51 centers where services are being provided. It is just the only difference that those that are not counted as fully operational TCC will have ad hoc services. You won't have 100% of the people there all the time, but they will be on call to provide those kinds of services. If I move on to slide 39, there we explain that the SCCU achieved a conviction rate of 93.9% in all courts, which is a slight deviation of minus 0.1% from the annual target, an improvement of 2.7% compared to what we achieved last year. The conviction rate in the dedicated courts is 95.8%. It is an improvement of 2.9% compared to last year. We pride ourselves in saying that this is an excellent achievement because these cases, as you understand, they require specialized skills, they require specialized people to be on board, and we also need forensic reports now and again, and they don't take the normal time to finalize. All in all, SCCU had 1,033 convictions in the regional and high court compared to only 85 convictions that were achieved last year. I've already explained this slide earlier on when I was talking about the TCCs that are operational. As you see, that we've got 51 sites where we are providing services. Furthermore, FOCA, which is Sexual Offences and Community Affairs in full, originally identified 4 new TCC sites to be established at the following centres: Advantage in Western Cape, Rolandale in Limpopo, King William Sound in the Eastern Cape, and Magadeni in KwaZulu-Natal for this financial year. Now my eyes are failing me, Chair, if you could just bear with me. Now I go on to deal with the number of persons convicted of corruption where the amount involved is more than 5 million. You will see it says amount involved is what the previous year's definition. The definition for this year going forward is the benefit, not just amount involved. The target for this one was 100 for the 5 years, of which we finalized 21 in the last financial year and 42 for the rest of the 5 years, and we were below target, and we give the explanation that these cases are complex and they take a long time to investigate, and there are various other reasons as to why we're not finalizing them quick enough. There will be the non-availability of either presiding officers or non-availability of defense counsel, the whole range of reasons that cost these matters not to be finalized quicker. But we are in the process of working towards making all the stakeholders come on board so that we are able to at least finalize a matter within a cycle period of 12 months. That's an ideal that we wish to achieve. We have a workshop coming up where we're going to be addressing all these things very soon towards the end of November this year. The number of JCPS officials convicted of corruption, as you can see there, we have a rate which is a minus 54.8%. The actual target for the 2013 is 19. The reason for this, we only have very few referrals of these matters. We can only, you know, rely on the matters that are being brought to our attention. We wouldn't know, we don't go and sniff out the matters from the department. We have to get referrals via the SAPS. The conviction rate in cybercrime prosecutions, as you can see there, we have a green of 26%. We achieved a finalization in 146 cases for the 2013 period, and the target was 110. And the actual for 2012-13, as you can see there, was 183 at 97.8%. Again, the reason for the deviation in a bigger positive number is because of the fluctuating rate year by year. The number of convicted persons of corruption where the amount involved is more than 5 million. This is the case that we call Output 3, which is a special focus for all of us. As I indicated earlier on, the performance within this indicator was only 63.8% below the annual target and 50% below the performance last year. Again, the reason for that is because these cases are complex, they take a while to investigate, and we only have so many resources to be able to deal with all these cases. We do try and outsource in some instances, but we don't outsource in all the cases. The number of JCPS officials convicted of corruption, this has increased from 84 personnel that were convicted last year to 19 this year. Fewer of these cases were received from the SAPS and NPS, as alluded to earlier. NPS is National Specialized Prosecution. And as you have heard, Dr. Ramay mentioned that some of the cases were dealt with by the National Prosecution Services as opposed to SCU. And SCU will be referred to those that are complex. So we also rely on the inflow of the referrals from NPS as well. The conviction rate in prosecution of sexual offences reported at the Tukizela Care Centre, the conviction rate improved from 61% in 2012-13 to 65.9% during the current period, exceeding the annual target of 64% by a margin of 1.9%. The annual performance of 65.9% was the performance over a period of 6 years. The actual number of convictions increased by 13.3%, which is a number of 1,554 compared to 1,372 that we received. And I might add that this is as a result of the good services and almost perfect services that we get from the TCCs, that people now have more confidence to come and support the cases, and the services that are being provided, they give people such confidence that they will be able to continue with their matters and get their matters to be done and finalized with on time. There's a table there below which explains, which just shows the number of TCCs that are operational. And the table below indicates the annual average of the conviction rate. I can see the slide on the, it's not even clear enough. So let's hope that the one that you have is on page on slide 43 of the old slide. The performance overview of sexual offences and community affairs. We have 158 prosecutors trained on sexual offences, 50 prosecutors trained on maintenance matters, 185 prosecutors trained on child justice, 58 prosecutors trained on domestic violence, 193 prosecutors trained on trafficking in person, not to traffic in person, but trafficking. 564 integrated training for stakeholders at the Tutuela Care Centre. As I said earlier, the Tutuela Care Centre is comprising of a whole range of services from police to health to legal. So that refers to that kind of training. In the maintenance matters, we have a total of 194,600 and 8 formal and informal maintenance inquiries which were closed, of which 148,410 was finalized compared to only 101,908 in the previous financial year. And you should see that we are in the green by a margin of 25.9%. 22,831 civil attachments were facilitated compared to 19,510 in the previous year, and 275 reciprocal maintenance orders were obtained compared to compared to 320 last year, I will come back and correct this one because the number is higher than the 221. The next line continues and deals with maintenance matters. It talks about the finalization rate of maintenance matters and the best as the best performance over a 5-year period, as you can see in the blocks there. The first one refers to the number of maintenance and finance matters dealt with. And the one below deals with the percentages of maintenance and finalized. If I may move us to the old slide 55. So stay with me, Chief. I'm just being reminded that I have not spoken about the trial to crime litigation unit. This is on slide 54 of the new document. There we deal with the 1,000 cases and we show the terms of imprisonment that we have achieved for the matters that have been finalized. We have terms of imprisonment ranging from 5, 8 to 12 years, which were imposed, whereas the other person became a state patient. In an armed struggling case, we received 5 years imprisonment. There's also a missing persons task team, which is the unit that works with the recommendations that came out of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. 23 cases were finalized. Of the TRC cases where we had incorrectly identified people, where they were exhumations, if that's the correct word, 14 of them were finalized and correct remains were handed over to the families. And I'm sure some of you have seen in the news where we have had coverage where we were handing over the remains back to the families. Then there was a matter where one Thulani Sizeko was alleged to have been an askari, but then it turned out that he was not an askari, and we feel that it is important that we should say that he was not an askari after investigations were completed. Thank you. If I may move to slide 55, that's the slide that deals with witness protection. The ideal is to have a zero as a target of harmed and threatened witnesses. And the first table indicates that the indicator is green. No witnesses were harmed nor threatened for the past 14 years. The slide 2, the table below, shows the percentage of witnesses that walked off the witness protection program. We have a deviation of a minus 1.9%. The reason is because more witnesses left the program without prior notification. We have here a difference between walk-off and witnesses that... For walk-offs, we have witnesses that have signed off and said they don't want to be part of the program any longer, and then we'll help those who have left without even notifying the protesters or the program that they are leaving the program. So all in all, we are not doing very well there. The deviation is a minus 1.9%. The table below on slide 56 of the old slide is a narrative that explains the tables on page on slide 55. If you go to the second last bullet, it shows there that there were 51 witnesses that have signed off the witness protection program. And only 12 of them have walked off the witness protection program. The 12 indicates those that have signed, and the 51 indicates those that have just abandoned the program. If I may now move, Chair, with your permission, to slide 83 and 84 of the old slides. These slides, Chair, are going back to the SCCU, which is the Special Commercial Crimes Unit. It indicates there the performance to date, the conviction rate in complex commercial crimes. We have to August. However, I have made the data to be current at the 16th of October, Chair. The conviction rate in complex commercial crime, we have a green of 0.9%. And the number of operational TCCs is a minus. And the reason for that, I think it has been explained in indicating that we don't only have 38 centers, we have 51 sites where we are providing services. The only problem with the rest of them is that we only need to finalize the appointments of the personnel that has to work in the center in order for them to be classified as fully operational and complete. The recruitment has already been finalized for those people that have to provide those services, and they should be starting very soon. The number of persons convicted of corruption where the amount is more than 5 million, we are 15.8% in the green. Year to date, from April to the 16th of October, we had 10 convictions already in the category. The number of JCPS officials convicted for offences related to corruption, we have a green, which is 22%. The conviction rate in cybercrime prosecution, we have a green as well. It should be, it's slightly lower at minus 1.2%. And the reason I give in there is that there are vacancies and limited dedicated costs and fewer investigations have been completed. The percentage of cases reported at TCCs that is referred to for court prosecution, we have an increase there, and more cases were finalized in which evidence was accepted by the court. And as you have heard, Dr. Ramaite has indicated that the court preparation officers have done a very sterling job in making sure that we have relaxed and confident witnesses in order for us to finalize our cases in an efficient manner. Thank you, Chair, for my presentation.
Chair, thank you. Chair, may I then hand over to Mr. Hofmeyer to deal with the performance in terms of the asset forfeiture unit.
Morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. Let's go to the next one. I must say that it's a much happier year for the asset forfeiture this year. You may recall that last year we had not performed that well on a number of our indicators and we've missed our targets. I think to some degree our performance in this year is helped by cases that we started working on this year but we're not able to finalize by the end of the year. But on our sort of two main targets in our strategic objectives, the number of complete forfeiture cases, you can see that we were well over target. I will discuss the performance of each indicator a bit more later. The value freezing order, we missed our target narrowly by 1.2%. Then on our other indicators on this page, you can see that we did very, very well, except on the last indicator. But on our value of complete cases, we're 74% above target. Number of freezing orders, 29% above target. success rate. We just squeaked in 0.2% of our target. The value of victim payments, we were 50% of our target, as well as the feeding orders in serious corruption matters. JCPS continues to be a challenge. I'll talk about that in a moment. So just an overview for us in the year. We performed well. We met or exceeded 75% of our targets and missed one narrowly. Our previous performance, as we said last year, had been impacted by capacity constraints. I think those were significantly lifted in the past year. But I think the main point is that we didn't really exceed our previous highest performance levels in our sort of four main indicators that measure the volume of our work. And that's the number of and the value of our freezing orders and our forfeiture orders. On average, we were 31.8% above target in those four indicators. We were 62% better than the previous year, and we were about 24% better than our previous best year, which was in 2010-2011. Just a more detailed discussion on each of the indicators. On the completed cases, this was by far our best performance ever of 390. Our previous best performance in a year was 333. A lot of this was due to very successful working together with the prosecution service, especially in the Western Cape, where there was a real organized effort to obtain confiscation orders in relatively small cases, but we did well over 100 cases just in the Western Cape, and I think that aided us significantly. On the value of freezing orders, as I said earlier, although this was our second best ever performance, it was just below target by 1.2%. It was well over the target for the previous year, and I think the improved performance was a lot due to the work at the anti-corruption task team, where we work very closely together with the Hawks and with the SIU, and that really has speeded up the work on big high-value cases. This is an indication, 64% of our total freezing orders came from cases at the anti-corruption task team. Value of completed forfeiture cases, again, this was our best ever performance, 15% higher than the previous best, 74% higher than the year before. Sorry, 70% higher than target and 150% better than the year before. Again, a lot of this has to do with the anti-corruption task team and the work that is being done with the Hawks and SIU to fast-track work on those cases. I think an additional factor here is, as we mentioned last year, that we are doing a lot more of our cases through Chapter 6 of POCA, a so-called non-conviction-based asset forfeiture, so that in big cases we are not delayed by the finalization of the criminal process, which is very often drawn out in the big cases. The number of freezing orders, again, this was our best performance, well over our previous best of 333. We were far above our target there. Again, we were helped by focusing on the non-conviction based asset forfeiture, which does mean that we can go to court before a criminal trial is instituted. Our success rate, as I said earlier, if we can just go to the next slide. We were just above target. You may see that we had, and I think we mentioned last year, that we had motivated for our target to be reduced to 93% in future, partly because in the very big value cases that we do, they are a lot more litigated, and the chances of losing is high. The value of payments to victims of crime, again, we had our second best year ever there, slightly below our best performance, but we were well above our targets and above the performance in the previous year. Again, ACPT was a major contributor to our success in those cases. We also normally just deal with our deposits into the criminal assets recovery fund. It was our best performance there. We deposited nearly 100 million rand in CARA. About 54 million of that came from the Tannenbaum matter from many years ago, but it finally got into the fund. And I think the total recoveries of the AFU has made from between CARA and Victims was also far higher than anything we've done before, with 182 million rand. Freezing orders in big corruption cases. Again, we were significantly above target. And as I said before, it isn't the corruption cases really that have made a major contribution to our increased performance on our value targets. The one blot on our record continues to be JCPS corruption cases. We have a relatively small target of about doing 11 or 12 of those cases a year, but we were well below our target and even below our performance in the previous year. And I think similar to my colleague, the issue of cases being referred, going through investigations, is the major obstacle there. And then just to look at our current year performance, you will see that in general we have, let me go indicator by indicator, on the number of completed forfeiture cases, we are well above target this month, but we are significantly below our level of performance last year. We're not going to hit that 390 again unless there's a miracle in the second half of the year. The value of freezing orders, I think we have benefited there from cases that we had hoped to do last year but couldn't. But there you can see we are 700% of our target. We have a couple of very big cases that was done, one in Gauteng Health that was about 1.8 billion. There are several other big cases that has contributed to what is an exceptional performance thing. Number of freezing orders, again, we are well above our current targets, but we are not going to match our performance from last year until something special happens, but we should have no problems meeting our target. The value of completed forfeiture cases, at the moment, we are well below targets still, but our value targets do go up and down a lot. We are still fairly confident that we will meet our targets for the year, but we're not going to get again close to last year's performance levels. The JCPS corruption cases, as you may see, remains a problem. In fact, we have asked for that indicator to be replaced by another one in the current year that is more focused on recovering money in these cases rather than just from JCPS officials. And then the number of freezing orders in large corruption cases, you can see that of our 2.5 million we've done so far, 2.2 billion is from corruption cases. And I think it's the area where we really have made a lot of impact. Our other indicator where we are still battling this year is also the value of victim payments. We're still 25% below targets. We are pretty confident that we will make it up in the second half of the year, but it's not a done deal. On our success rates, we're actually doing quite a bit better than last year, where we end up just above 94%. At the moment, we are 3.5% of our target, but I think in the last month there has been a couple of cases reported lost, so that figure will go closer to the 94%. I think that's it from SF4%. Thank you, Chair.
May I, with your leave, Chair, hand over to the CEO to deal with resources. Thank you.
The annual report contains significant information relating to the resorting of the organization. And there's a comprehensive report in terms of the guidelines relating to the HR oversight report, which is comprehensive information on employment equity stats of the organization, our recruitment facts and the various levels, as well as performance awards, discipline, etc. We did make a few extracts of those slides based on past experience, relating to what we regarded perhaps most important to you as a committee. The organizational development, we give you an overall view, a snapshot of the organization with the number of posts, as well as number of posts filled. You will note that we have got a few less posts filled, and we have less contractors. The move in the organization has to try and move away from contractors and rather employ those persons on a permanent basis. That's specifically within the Tudela Care Centers, where previously this was done with funding, we now have been allocated baseline funding for this, and we are utilizing it to fill the post. Unfortunately, recruitment is not always happening as quick as we would like to have in all areas. In the current financial year, there's been a significant focus on that. Of interest to you might be the big jump in the vacancy rate, and I'd like to just explain that. Previously, the vacancy rate was only 0.7, but if you look at the figures and you see the numbers there, you'll see that the increase has been in the number of posts. Now, there was a prescript that indicated that where you didn't have posts that were funded, you had to remove them from your establishment. Not from your blueprint, but from your establishment on the shore. So these posts with that were removed in accordance with that. As you know, this current financial year, we do have sufficient funding for those posts. So we basically put those posts back onto the establishment so that we can advertise them and fill them and get to the numbers we believe are required in the organization to deliver quality service. If we then go to the SMS employment, it's a new requirement in the National Treasury Guidelines relating to this, but it is important to see within our top management structure what our vacancy rate looks like then. And as you can see, we give you a picture there of the past 2 years and compare them, and you can see that we fall two of our top posts that were vacant previously, which is DPP and KN, as well as the very critical post of the NDPP, which was filled in the PCC. You will note that in terms of our senior deputy director of the public prosecution, there is a slight decline in terms of the number of court posting. And there are two reasons for it. The one is that we've actually had, and we've reported on this in the past, quite a high number of persons within age group 55 to 65. So from the age group of 55, people can apply for retirement. And we've actually seen quite a big increase in those applications. And it's been mainly from white males, which then will allow us to clean up that top structure, which you'll see from our employment equity data. There is the problem that we really have with our employment equity. So though we've lost a number of white males in that area, it does offer us the opportunity to then fill those posts. We've also not filled the code in those levels in the housing office, housing north and housing south, as we need to finalize the establishments for the Polokwane and the Mpumalanga offices and need to determine which office, how many people need to move there. But we are currently in a very extensive recruitment drive, you will look from our efforts, and we also post quite rapidly in that regard. Skills development, beneficiaries and costs. You'll see our main focus, we are a legal organization, and therefore you'll still see that our main focus in terms of our beneficiaries for skills development remains with our prosecutors and our advocates. And there is a small focus on course support, there's less people in that area, but it's important that you deliver a quality service, you actually have the right skills to do that, so you'll see a number of persons there. When we look at bursaries on the next slide, you might ask about the arts and culture. This is a fourth generation officer doing a BA degree in criminology, and that's one of the reasons why this person has a degree there, and the technology IT. The bulk, yeah, you'll see we don't have as many law bursaries as you might want to see. And the reason for that is that most of our employees already have a legal degree, and we have had an extensive drive to move people from the B juris or the B prop to the LLB, and many of our staff have actually done that. And so there are not as many applications as there were in the past for people to study LLB. We now see a lot of applications for master's degrees and doctorates and also in business. There's a big interest in business applications for it. Skills development, intern intake, we haven't done as well as we would like to, but it's slowly progressing. In current financial year, there's been significant increase in terms of the number of aspirants, and we plan to take another intake early next year as well, not the financial year, the calendar year. And we're all currently also recruiting some more interns. The current intern period is coming to an end this month, and we want to take some more interns in. And the bulk of the interns will be aspirants, the others will be in the support services. This is going to be nice. This is always of interest. I think we're doing very well there in terms of bringing down the disciplinary hearings from 2011-12, where we had 169 down to 86 in the last financial year. Spending, the turnaround times are improving. Employee suspended did slightly increase. External duties nicely down. And outstanding as well. Grievances also, actually. Most of the grievances still related to the performance management system. Lack of understanding there, or perhaps also application of the principles of organization. And dismissals at sitting at 15 the organization. The kind of matters for which people were disciplined for, we give you a breakdown meeting, and we also talk about what specifically the grievances, how many were resolved, and how many are still sitting. Interesting for us, or important for us, is the external disputes, of which we had 31, 25 it was upheld, and only 6 it was dismissed. External disputes in the board, 12 finalized, 11 successful, and 1 unsuccessful, which is a 93% success rate. In terms of the kinds of matters, the one that would interest you would be, of course, honestly, the corruption and bribery. We have added a slide with a bit more detail because there wasn't enough flesh on that one. I think it's an important aspect. You heard Dr. Ramayeti report that there was one conviction of an EPA official in that regard. But if you look at the slide after that, that we've added 2 slides further down, we just add one more. We just added this slide to give you the detail because we saw that there was a gap in that, and I know that this is an important aspect. There were 10 disciplinary hearings for corruption that dealt with in that financial year, of which 9 were finalized. 4 were carried over from the previous financial year, and 6 were actually taken on in that financial year. And then 4 of the employees, outcomes on the 9, 4 of the employees were dismissed. 1 of them received a sanction of suspension without pay. 2 were found not guilty, and 2 were closed. The 2 that were closed, the person resigned before the case could be finalized, and in the other case, the witness refused to testify. So that's the detail. We of course, this will be, these cases get finalized sometimes before the criminal cases get finalized, and that's why this is a quicker process than the criminal case, and that's why it's more against than others. Audit findings, we give you the breakdown, as you know, we've indicated to you that in the last 2 years we've received a clean audit opinion. That doesn't mean that there aren't areas where there were matters of interest that we need to, as an organization, act upon. So we have already, for the financial year, before the report was even published, prepared our new audit action plan. And all areas identified by the auditors, because something of small escalate is not dealt with immediately. So we have a very extensive audit action plan to deal with all the areas identified by both the internal auditors as well as the external auditors, but also identified by us as potential risk areas, because new legislation, there's new requirements, and if not managed properly, and you know the plan in place, these new things can actually trip you up as you're going forward. The audit action plan gets monitored on a monthly basis within the organization. I myself have meetings with myself, and it's very, very closely managed in terms of non-compliance as well as in terms of making sure that we meet our deadlines. We also have an external audit committee that's part of the Department of Justice. We report our progress there, and we're well pleased with that.
Thank you. May I, with your leave, now hand over to Ms. Van Zee to deal with the finance and procurement.
Thank you, Chair. I'm quickly going to take you through our budget and expenditure. The first slide we've got on the board is our budget expenditure as at the end of the financial year 2013-14. As our NDDP already or noted, is that we've spent our budget 100% of our budget allocation. The biggest portion of our budget, 80% of our budget, for compensation of employees, and 20% is for our operational costs. The next slide is a breakdown of the Department of Justice budget program. Here you will notice that we are the second largest program in the Department of Justice, where the NDA accounts for 21% of the Department of Justice budget. The budget growth over the MTF period is, for the Department of Justice, is 5.68%, and the MTF budget growth for the NDA is 4.8%.
Although our budget growth is a little bit lower than the overall budget for the department, we are of the view that our budget will be sufficient to achieve our strategic objectives. The next slide, this is the slide of the breakdown of the NPA budget, breakdown per SIP program. The biggest portion of our budget goes to NPA, which is 66%, where the core of our business is. The second largest SIP program is our support services, which accounts for 16% of our budget. Within support services, we've got centralized budget items like the IT, security, fleet and accommodation. Then if we go now to slide 93, the conclusion, 93. Yeah, slide 93 is our budget. This is expenditure status at the end of August. In this slide, there is a few slides with the details of our August expenditure. If you look at this slide, you will see that our current spending is at 37.9% against the linear budget of 42%. Now, this would seem like an underspending, but if you look at our procurement plan, we've got major procurement projects currently in place that currently have a bond stage of procurement, which will increase our spending. We're also placing a lot of focus on our spending in our lower court, and we're also going to provide resources to our prosecutors in the lower court where the Department of Justice can't accommodate all our needs. That includes IT equipment for our prosecutors, printers and gowns. The remainder of the slide is just a detail of the expenditure at the end of August. That's the conclusion of the budget and our expenditure. And one concern that we currently have is our annual financial statement that we currently consider that with the Department of Justice. We're in the process of applying for approval to prepare separate financial statements. We haven't obtained approval for the current financial year, so we're consolidating, which will have an impact on our audit and auditing of our financial statements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and that concludes our presentation.
Presentation. I will now ask the honourable members to engage with the honourable Farah.
Thank you, Jay, and thank you for the extensive reports. We note that there are a number of improvements in different areas, and we congratulate you for that. There are so many questions. We'll deal with a couple of the issues. I think for me, well, maybe just one, and I'm sure. Just to commend the prosecution in Oscar Pistorius' matter in the manner that the prosecutors have been portrayed in public domain. I think it is really exceptional, but this might be premature, but at what stage will the NPS decide whether to appeal the judgment? Obviously one needs to wait for the sentence, but is that something? No. And will, at what stage will there be a decision as to the appeal on that issue. One of the big issues of the issue of withdrawals, I'm trying to trace the stats with the number of withdrawals, and it's difficult to gauge where you've got a number of ADR, you've got a number of cases that are diverted, one assumes they're all withdrawals, and that is an issue that I'd just like you to give us information. Obviously the issue of sexual offences is a matter that has been highlighted by various NGOs visiting us, and it is a matter that we continue to be concerned about. According to the police stats, last year there were 46,253 rapes. And according to your slide 34, there were 8,174 matters finalized, which will probably include all matters. And if you check, according to the Medical Research Council, that only 1 in 9 are reported, then obviously this is still a matter of great concern. And I ask you to just comment as to ways, firstly, that we can improve the reporting, and secondly, how one can improve the number of cases. Because we congratulate you on the conviction rates, But if the numbers are not sufficient, then whilst the conviction rate is good, but the numbers at the end of the day, how many perpetrators are actually coming and being successfully prosecuted in this area? Which then brings me to the third issue, and that is on page 42 of your report, which gives you your performance of the NPS, number of criminal cases dealt with. And that, I think, is the key, 32915 key, which is a reduction of minus 6.3%. And the reason given is criminal court dates reduced. Now, we need to unpack that a little bit. Where is the problem concerning the court days that are being reduced, and how can one improve that performance? Then, of course, the next is the ADRs, which is a substantial improvement, 176, 189, alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, which is an increase of 23.8%, more cases being identified to be diverted from the formal criminal justice system. So one then assumes those were, can you give me a specific issue? Is that all diversions or is it also plea bargains? Would you be able to tell or can? And if so, is it also where you've got diversions, what monitoring is there with diversions? Because most of them are at a district level. So what monitoring takes place? Then I'd like to quickly, the maintenance improvement is very good. That's an issue over the years. We've always raised the issue of maintenance, and that really impacts the poorest of the poor. So those files, 45 and 46, show a very good improvement. The assets forfeiture, also the improvement there. But what was mentioned was, there's a quote that says, its performance of the past years was significantly impacted by the reduction in its legal and financial investigative capacity by about 20% due to budget and other constraints. Now, we see an increase in performance, but are you still struggling with those legal and financial investigatory capacity? I've strongly argued to increase the capacity of such units. Surely it's a win-win situation. But obviously we know we've got financial constraints when it comes to the fiscus that will be mentioned tomorrow. The last aspect is the conviction of the JCPS officials. I mean, we did raise it earlier in the year, and you have tried to give us some explanation. See when you unpack the different departments, and of course you are dependent on other departments referring matters to you. But it is a massive concern if you've only got 48 officials from the SAPS, and that is something that we might need to raise with the SAPS, where we know there are wide levels of corruption. Only 48 officials from SAPS. What is the figures of the SAPS? 150,000 or something. You've got, and then you've got, there's nothing from correctional services. No mention. Home Affairs 4. SARS 2. The whole of the Defence Force. Only 2 officials. And we are aware that there are issues of illegal expenditure corruption. So, I just, from our side, it is a bit of a concern when you see those low levels. And I see it's only 54 persons convicted of corruption by the NPS, 19 by the SCCU. Again, your explanation will be you dependent on departments sending you those matters. But Chair, then, I think that is my initial questions from my side. I just lastly, the bill, the NPA bill, We obviously want to assist you with that bill because it's very beneficial. And I understand from the Minister that he's referred it back to you. Are you happy with the progress in the finalisation of that bill, and how can we assist you in that regard? Thank you very much.
Honourable Sir, you made reference to an appeal, and there was a kind of unrest on your side. I don't know what you said. What were you trying to say?
No, I was not aware that the sentence had already been given, so I would just like to comment, if you think it's appropriate, to comment on whether the NPS will appeal that judgment, or both the judgment and the sentence, or would you like to take time to consider it? But we know that the judgment itself came out some time ago, but it's up to you if you think it's appropriate to comment. Thank you.
Advocate. Chair, I am not aware that the sentence has been handed down. As the chair is aware that the sentence was taking place
today when we were busy here. But I think from the indications in the house, I understand that he was sentenced to 5 years. That's imprisonment? Okay. Well, I think my comment regarding the conviction and sentence and the issue of the appeal will be basically that we'll have to study the record, consult with the prosecution team, and then we'll take the matter forward. Yes. Thank you. And then I will hand over to Dr. Ramayi to deal.
It's quite interesting. Actually, that's what I would have advised the MP. It's not an easy thing, but I actually appreciate and understand. But from our perspective as prosecutors, I think our approach will be completely different. We will have to, first of all, as you said, meet with the prosecution team, do a post-mortem of the various issues. The interesting thing is even senior people in the NPS are actually quite agitated. Wrongly so, I said to them, because I do think that it's really premature. There's a whole range of things that we will need to consider very, very carefully. It's not the only one, and one is aware that the thinking of the public out there is rather somewhat different from our thinking, especially when we are performing prosecutorial functions. There is another case, the Jukdub case. Now, whether we will have to consider, bearing in mind that it's actually a judgment of the full bench. So these are some of the things that, unfortunately, we are unable to provide the definite answer until we ourselves have actually looked at the whole things. And I always say to my colleagues, if it were possible for us to look at some of these things as judges would do, because in any event, that's where these matters eventually end up. We will do ourselves good so that we are not found to be wanting when these matters go on appeal. I would caution against being criticized for easily going on appeal by the appeal court because judges are wanted to do that. So that's the advice that I am. If anything, then it should depend on me, not on him.
Good advice, sir. I also appoint you as my advisor.
The question of sexual offences rates reported versus matters finalised. I don't know if she can answer to that. But from the MPS point of view, I think a lot of it depends on, and this is what SOCA seeks to do, to ensure that more and more cases are reported. I mean, it's not clear to me, and then we have looked at this at the time that I was still with SOCA. What is the cause of less cases being reported, or not more cases being reported, whereas we know that there are actually quite a number of offences that are committed. There may very well be various reasons. One of the reasons which SOCA sought to address was to reduce the whole issue of secondary victimization. Because in many instances, I mean, victims, actually minister says victim is not the right word, the offender. The experience of the criminal justice system from the past has not been so good. But my understanding of SOCA's work is that, and that's what their reports say, is that there has actually been improvement. It's not a significant improvement, but compared to previous years, there has been an improvement in terms of reporting as well as in terms of finalized cases. The other reason may very well be that our conviction rates are possibly not the best that one would wish. We're still sitting at around 60s. And people probably have a sense that in any event, not much is going to come out of me going to court. So we still need to look at the underlying reasons for this non-reporting of cases. I mean, on the other hand, if you compare them to the 3 or 5 house robberies, I mean, the reporting has just shot up. So I think that would be my answer. And then on the question of the reduction of criminal court days, the major problem here is not so much with the prosecutors themselves. The problem is with the other role players.
and particularly the presiding officers, and especially in view of the fact that they are actually in charge of the court rules and enrolling some of the matters. The unavailability of presiding officers at times, sometimes presiding officers being appointed as acting judges, there's a whole range of reasons. We have engaged with the regional court presidents together with the NDPP to try and address some of these issues. But a great deal of the cause is with the unavailability of the other role players. Initially, it would have been bigger, for example, but we have engaged with them and things are improving. And then the issue on the increase of ADRM. Now, we accept that there is a cause of concern, not only for this committee. I mean, this is a concern that has been raised by the current Deputy Minister of Justice as well as by the Minister. We have engaged with them, and we do accept that there is cause for concern, especially where there is insufficient monitoring. To the extent that we now accept that there is obviously a need for legislation to deal specifically with ADRM, for example, under what circumstances and what monitoring mechanisms. So MPS is currently dealing with a draft policy document, which we will then submit to DOD for purposes of informing the sort of legislation that we think would be sufficient. Currently, there are gaps. There have been instances where prosecutors have diverted, where in fact they were not need to divert. For example, where the parties themselves have actually reconciled and do not need to go for diversion, then the prosecutor will pick up the phone and say, no, come, let's do a diversion, so that they can then record that as a success. Now, where the parties have actually already settled and there's no need for them to go to court, there's no need for a diversion. So we do have those cases, but currently the DPPs are monitoring the situation. I think the convictions in JCTS, again, there is just a question of not getting the cases. But the reality is we know that they are there. Where exactly they are? I don't think that we need to embark on a joint effort with other role players to actually, unfortunately, we don't investigate. We wait for the police to investigate and to bring the cases to us. But we will try to work together with the police to make sure that they at least get to us. From the MPS point of view, the cases that we have had were mainly local cases of corruption, not really your major JCPS officials' corruption.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I see the advocate from this respect to see all the statements.
I think just to add the question around the report, we do actually on page 56 of the annual report, we do actually give the figures of the withdrawals per forum, and then in the breakdown of each forum we do an annual comparison of various aspects. And you also asked about whether three bulk has been included in the ADRM. If you look at page 51 of our report, we give breakdown of what is included in the ADRM. A three bulk is not an ADRM, it counts as a verdict case.
Honorable Brindbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question is, I see that Ms. Makeke reported today that Mr. Hoffman is the acting national director, and the national director is also here. So what is the necessity for an acting national director if the national director is here? And who is in fact the national director? Yes.
Are you speaking from that side or this side?
Certainly from this side.
Oh, I see. Because I thought that this side have the right to put together their delegation according to what
they can bring wherever they like. Of course they can. But we'd like to know who the national director in fact is. Why is there a need for an acting national director if there's a national director? That's sort of an oxymoron. Secondly, the 411 in irregular expenditure. Mr. Van Denzburg addressed that issue. And also the civil claims for 43.2 million all opposed. Why were they all opposed? And the what a little bit more detail in this regard, please. It's been reported quite widely in the press, Mr. Kassana, that an offer has been made to you to vacate your office, and that you made a counter offer. If you could just give us a little more detail in that regard, please. And then, if you could tell me, the reputational fallout for the NPA as a result of this ongoing sort of battle between yourself and the president, is there a plan in place to deal with that? Because obviously, to the best of my knowledge, certain kind of people are starting to tell me that it affects morale in the organization. Have you got some sort of plan to address that issue? I think it is.
These are matters being handled in the executive.
Yes, the executive chair, and Mr. Chair has been handled quite widely in the press, so I think it's perfectly acceptable. I see that you have, you said that you want to enhance the independence of the NPA by being separated from justice. How precisely will that enhance your independence? As you've done quite well with your appeals, they've increased, finalization appeals have increased, but there's no indication of how many of them were successfully appealed. If you could just get some more detail there, please. And why fewer cases were finalized in the High Court. Then the backlog is dealt with in the district courts quite comprehensively, but I was unable to find a patch. My mistake, a patch. If you could refer to the backlog position in the regional court somewhere else, then you could just direct me to that spot so that I can read up on it. And the cases lost or withdrawn have increased from 33% to 56%, if we could have some more detail in that regard. With regards to your integrity management unit, I see that there are three programs there. I presume they're all funded programs. They appear to me to be exactly the same program. If you could just direct me to the difference between the programs, please. Yeah, I'll give somebody else a chance. I have many other questions, but you can give somebody else a chance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceed, but don't answer questions which are not fair.
Thank you, Chair. I think firstly, you've asked me that it is reported, widely reported in the press that I've been given an offer to vacate office by the President. And equally so, it was reported in the media and I was interviewed where I refuted that there's been no offer, and I cannot take the matter any more than that. Yes. Then, again, also the reputation between myself and the President, I can only say that I'm not aware of any reputational damage between me and the President, safe to say that there was, he announced that he wants to intend to institute an inquiry, and my understanding is that the inquiry will then determine whether I am a suitable person to hold office, and that is suspect, and there is nothing untoward in that. I can't read anything, any rift between us. And then the independence of the NPA, I think the issue was about whether or not the point I was addressing is basically the point which the Honourable Mr. Swart has referred to when he referred to the NPA bill and what can you as the committee do to assist us with the bill and whether we are happy with the progress so far, because the bill, we are busy considering the bill. We are busy engaging on the bill, and I think we will report as soon as we are ready, because we are still engaging on the bill. There are many issues that we are tackling at the moment, and until once and when we have finally discussed and reached consensus as to what do we want to see of the NPA in its form, then we'll send the representations to the minister for him to take them to Parliament. I think that's
That's all that I can say about that. Then I will hand over to Acting. Well, I must say that my computer or my iPad may have let me down, but if it was recorded that Mr. Hofmeyer is acting as of today, perhaps that was a misprint. He will be acting from tomorrow because I'll be out of the country and business. Thank you. Then may head over to
Is it not possible to give the Honourable Sir some indication as to how soon you think you can complete that work on the bid? There's some time frame.
Chair, I think extensive work has been done so far, and I think what is remaining now is just to tighten up the loose ends and put up a memorandum and send it across. That will be, I think that will happen before, if I can estimate, before the end of this year. Thank you.
The questions that I got relating to MPS, I think, were three. The first one was information with respect to successful appeals. Unfortunately, we haven't kept the statistics in that respect. We will have to go back and see if we can provide the relevant information. We only kept information around appeal. It may very well be actually a good idea to keep information around successful appeals. So we will get back and then we will look into that. And then the other one was the question of backlogs in the regional courts in particular. Again, in that respect, we don't keep statistics with respect to backlogs. The statistics are kept mainly by the Department of Justice, particularly for purposes of determining whether additional courts should be established to deal specifically with the backlogs. But then again, then we can go and see if we can get the information and provide. The question with respect to why sure cases are now being done in the regional court. Mainly that has been a result of the increased jurisdiction of the regional courts. So that the preference has actually now been to enroll more and more criminal cases in the regional court rather than in the high courts, where in fact more time is given to dealing with civil cases to the detriment of criminal cases.
To
you. Thank you. I'll deal with the question relating to corporate services. Let me just start by the illegal expenditure. The illegal expenditure, because I also heard comments earlier made relating to the fact that, you know, corruption wasn't due, it was mentioned that corruption and illegal expenditure should be seen together. Illegal expenditure means that processes weren't followed. It means that value for money was obtained in the process. They didn't follow the correct prescribed processes. And nobody, what there's a whole process that needs to be done in terms of the investigation. The regular expenditure is identified, the potentially irregular expenditure. Full investigation then gets done within the organization to determine how that irregular expenditure occurred. Then we determine whether anybody can be held responsible for that. If so, we must also determine whether in law we can recover from that person. Most cases we get a legal opinion from the state law advisors and or the state attorney to tell us whether the person can be held personally liable to recover the funds from. We can't be held liable to recover the funds, but he can be held liable from a discipline process. We take discipline action against every single individual that does incur that liability. The 411,000 that took within the current financial year, which you're asking about, that's the legal expenditure. That result, that was related to, in the main, to the leasing of the Kimberley DPP building. That happened many, many years ago. And because of the contractual obligation that exists, because of that action that was taken then, we can't get out of it. We are at the moment busy with a criminal case. It's with the SEDU. We are waiting for the outcome from the prosecution side into the possible prosecution of individuals in respect of that matter. That's the bulk of it. The other irregular expenditure, it is really very, it's also that's the old one, that's the previous year. In the current year, that is the bulk of the irregular expenditure. You will see on page, what 199. We didn't give you a breakdown what the original expenditure was. We were also acting allowance is what happens. It's procedural. Only certain people can approve the acting allowance, and somebody doesn't have that delegation then actually get somebody to act. So it's important, but we actually get every single individual in each of those cases. We give you also a breakdown of that. In some of those cases, we condone on the PCDC, where I can condone, the DC can condone, she will condone. A lot of our irregular expenditure of prior years, because this year gets restated, relates to things that were done in 2004, 2002. We have applied to National Treasury for accommodation. Unfortunately, it has not been granted to us, so we'll have to live with that figure for years to come. In terms of the civil claims, if I think you are referring to what is written on page 216, let me just explain how it's not all the civil claims in the organisation. When you've got to deal with your financial statements, you get two things. One is contingent liability, and the other one is a provision. Contingent liabilities are those cases where there's possibility that you might have to pay, but you don't think that you will have to pay. You have to still put it in as an indicator to the world that there is. So these cases are all those. These are all the cases which we believe that we can, there's a good possibility that we will win them, but we must still declare them. They will be sued, but we think we can win. The cases where we believe that you're going to lose, they come in provision. So in the provisions where there's 80% of more harm done by the advocate or the prosecutor involved in the case, that tells us this, in this case there's a good possibility that we're going to use, or we've already lost that case. That gets declared as a provision. So you should not think that this is all the civil claims in the organisation. Also very important to note that NPS civil claims are not included in that because they were declared by DOJ because they looked at the state attorney. So that figure is in terms of there, but we have the about a 98% success rate in terms of our civil claims. A lot of it's like wrongful prosecution, also get sued for in relation to the wrongful arrest, etc. The question around the independence of the organisation and how it will help us, and that relates to our accounting as an organisation, not as our independence in terms of prosecutorial independence. That's unquestionable. There is absolute prosecutorial independence. The independence we're talking about is financial independence, because right now the DG is the accounting officer of the organisation. We have an excellent relationship with the DG. She is a good DG and she is a good administrator for the organisation. But it still depends on relationships, because the DG is the accounting officer and has the right to say no to funding certain activities within the organisation. She hasn't done it and she won't do it. But to give us independence will allow our economy to decide about our resourcing, to decide about our financial independence as an organisation, and for us to be totally independent in both our decision-making, because for you to decide to prosecute the case, you must be able to decide how you're going to fund the case. And for those, you need them to go together. And that is why we believe that the bill and the independence, the total independence of the organisation, is very important to us.
Thank you, Honourable Sir.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair. There's much in this annual report that seeks to measure whether or not the National Prosecuting Authority is achieving success. And I'd just like to drill down a little bit about what constitutes success. Because if you look at slide 16, for example, on the old, I've only got the old presentation, it makes a distinction between charges or counts and cases. And really, you know, if you get a case like, for example, the Oscar Pistorius case, where an individual is found guilty on two counts and not guilty on two counts, does that constitute a successful case? In other words, let's say, you know, you get charged with culpable homicide, reckless driving, and you get off on the culpable homicide and get convicted on the reckless driving, is that a success in your terms? The second thing, I want to come back to the interdepartmental cooperation around the conviction of people in the DC, in the JPCS CUSPA for corruption. Let me just illustrate in one way. In the annual report of the Department of Correctional Services, there were 2,960 disciplinary cases. 103 of those resulted in dismissal of officials, and 82 of those were for theft, bribery, or fraud. Okay, and we had 19 convictions only across the entire cluster. Now, I know you say you have to wait until they get referred. I'm just saying, is that good enough? Are there not better ways of achieving this result? But even if that were the case, and you had to wait for referral, I want to refer Mr. Abbott Hoffman in one of his previous manifestations when he was the acting head or the real head, I don't know, of the SIU. And he went and did the investigation into the Department of Correctional Services. And he found widespread corruption and tender fraud and I don't know what else. And on about the 16th of November 2009, he made a presentation to the committee in which he said that there was a particular individual called Mr. Patrick Gillingham who should be prosecuted for corruption and fraud and I don't know what else. Well, as far as I can tell, Mr. Gillingham hasn't been prosecuted yet. That's, you know, 5.5 years on, and we're no closer to finalising. That's within your own organisation, or broad organisation. You did the investigation. You recommended the prosecution. There's no prosecution. Then, also, because I tend to look at this thing within the framework of the Department of Correctional Services, there are at the moment 43,853 remand detainees, people costing the taxpayer 300 rands a day. They have been convicted, and the average remand detention period is 176 days, 86 months. I just want to know what efforts are. We've heard what the Department of Correctional Services said about what efforts they're making to try and reduce that figure. Is the National Prosecuting Authority also equally concerned about this figure and about the wastage, and what steps is taken? Finally, Chair, I'd just like to solicit the views of the National Prosecuting Authority on whether they think that corruption is a Western concept and a victimless crime. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable member has raised some concerns, and I understand where you're coming from, and the concerns that you've raised are also shared by the NPA, but as you have correctly pointed out and as we have alluded, I think it's what needs to be, there should be engagement between all the stakeholders. Because the difficulty that we have, you made the example of Mr. Hoffmeyer while he was head of SIU, but the bottom line is, he may well have conducted the investigation and made a recommendation that a certain individual had to prosecute it. But remember that we only prosecute when there is a docket, a police docket. Then you make a recommendation and the matter has still has to go to the police for investigation, a docket to be opened and be referred to us. That is the problem. And I've seen also that you have also made reference to the annual report that was presented, the statistics that are presented to you by the Correctional Services. Again, as I think it was noted that we do not have those people in our presentation. The challenge is that if the matter are not referred to us, we cannot deal with those matters. But it remains equally a cause for concern when really we know that these things are happening. I think we have to embark on a joint effort with all players, especially at the JCPS level, of how best do we get these matters before on the run players and ultimately to the prosecution for prosecution. We know to the concerns and we share the same concerns with you.
Well, we can just do something, just sharing the concerns. So I'm saying you're just sharing the concerns. You're not committing to do anything. And so who's supposed to take the initiative?
Chair, I have said that Chair, we need to embark on a joint approach. My recommendation is that at the level of the JCPS, where most of the stakeholders, all, in fact all of the stakeholders are involved, that we need to get to do something, and we are committing to raise these issues at the JCBS and find the best possible way of really identifying these matters and checking them and make sure that they ultimately brought to our attention for, or they are fed to the prosecution service for prosecution.
Thank you. An interesting question around what constitutes success or a successful prosecution. We have debated this issue amongst ourselves. In fact, we debate it almost every year with the DPPs when we set our new indicators. But what guides us is what is in our strategic plan currently. And in our strategic plan, we have certain performance indicators. And these are what actually guide us in determining whether we've been successful or not. It's not so much in terms of prosecution itself, but it's in terms of the indicators. For example, the number of criminal cases I realize with 80%, conviction rates in the high courts, conviction rates in the regional courts. And unfortunately, those are the very few indicators that we can only determine our success, which have actually been approved by the National Treasury in terms of the Treasury guidelines. And that is the only way that we can measure our success. But it's also important, the question itself. We have raised questions ourselves. Is it a successful prosecution where an accused person is found guilty on a competent but lesser verdict? You know, we consider it as a success, even if we have preferred a much higher conviction. There's also the quality of prosecutions. I mean, we have debated about whether, in fact, we have done our job in an instance where we haven't actually gotten a conviction, but the prosecution itself was good. So these are some of the issues that we ourselves have considered. And then on the question of remand detainees, I mean, this is similar to the situation with respect to corruption. Most of these remand detainees continuously are in this cell because their matters have not been finalized. Now, in fact, the matters have been finalized. We have insisted that these matters should actually be on the court rolls. Now, these are, once again, matters that are beyond our control. But again, we want to work, for example, with the SAPS as well as with correctional service to try and deal with the issue. It's a concern for us. Because in any event, a number of these remand detainees end up with us much, much later. We would rather have them sooner. The other issue, the last question, is perhaps in a Western concept. Look, we are prosecutors, or I am a prosecutor. For me, it's a simple thing. Corruption is legislated. You have the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act. Our duty is to prosecute in terms of the laws of the country. Whether it's a victimless crime, I would like to look into that, but not as a prosecutor.
Sure. May I hand over to Mr. Hofmeyr to add?
Chair, maybe just on the question of the definition, it is on page 224 of our annual report, the definition of what is counted in a success. But bluntly, it means if any person is convicted of any charge in a case, it's counted as a success. It becomes difficult to try and say who was acquitted of which charges and so on. So I think for simplicity and the fact that that is what we've done since inception, that is how the success rate is calculated. Perhaps just on the issue that was raised around Mr. Gillingham, I think it's related to the Borsata prosecution. It has been...
Sorry, CEO, you want to interrupt? You're fine. Thanks.
I don't have the details with me, but we were recently asked a parliamentary question on Borsata, and I think the current state of the case is reflected in that answer. I wanted to maybe just add one thing on the JCPS cases. It is a responsibility that has also been given to the anti-corruption task team, and it had quite a big conference with all the JCPS departments last year, and part of it is to try and address the public capacity issues in the different departments to ensure that those cases are properly dealt with and investigated, but also that they are referred for criminal prosecution where appropriate. So we are hoping that we will have better outcomes out of that as that process unfolds.
Honorable Maida will be followed by Honorable Majaki and Honorable Ron and Honorable Rehane.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a bit disturbed in the one-sided manner in which we interpret the conviction rate of JCP as officials. The facts presented by the NPA indicate that a lesser number of these officials than we anticipated has been convicted. Now, honorable sources out there, we know that there is widespread corruption. The NPA also is saying that they know that there is widespread corruption, but the facts don't come to them. Now, I have a bit of a problem here, because we are being given here an annual report which presents facts, and these facts must be correctly interpreted. If there is this corruption out there which is not sufficient, then what is the problem? Has the NPA interrogated this problem? Are there cover-ups? If there are cover-ups, who is covering up? And why don't we root out these people? But on the other side of the coin, we are getting into the 20 years of democracy. Is it possible that we might be having a public service that is maturing? A public service that is running away from corruption? Can we make a thorough analysis without making wild allegations to the nation and portraying the public service as generally corrupt without facts? I want us to go for the facts on the scene. The officials concerned, we anticipated that a certain number will be convicted, but fewer things are sufficient. Let us dig deep and make a proper analysis as possible. Thank you very much.
Honorable Maida, I think you are assisting us. You see, for us to go and pick up things in the newspapers and come to this forum and say there's widespread corruption, that's a message that we're also sending to the world. And that's why you'll have reports saying South Africa is number one on corruption. But these are really just allegations of things picked up in the press. So now, as you correctly say, we are dealing with a report. Now, for me, if there are less officials prosecuted, according to the report, I would say it's a success, because why are they not convicted? So maybe we should really try to, in this forum, we are addressing the country, we are addressing the international community, let's not say things that we cannot prove that are not founded. Thank you. Can you proceed, Honorable Mr. Nassan? Can you deal with this question?
Chair, I think that was a fair comment from the Honorable Member. I don't think that really there is anything that we require to add. It's a fair comment. I think I responded to the issue of corruption matters, and I've been consistent that it's the inflow, the matters that we receive, that we have to deal with. It's only the matters that appear before us. And when the Honorable Member referred me to the annual report presented by the Correctional Services, then that was my response that those matters that she has referred to, where you said that there were about 84 personnel that were were dismissed and for corruption. Mm. Those matters do not appear in our report, and we never received those cases.
Honorable sir,
see, I just maybe need to clarify when I indicate widespread corruption, and I suppose one needs to define what is meant by that. If you've got an estimated amount of 50 billion rand a year that is wasted on procurement, and if you've got the situation that my colleague Mr. Self has raised of the number of people that are being convicted in disciplinary matters that are not charged, then I think the point my colleague makes is correct, that we need to look carefully at the figure that the NPA is bringing. And again, they are dependent on other departments. But it must surely be a matter of concern when you have so many disciplinary actions in correction services and not one successful prosecution. So, Chair, I think as well, the Minister of Finance last year, I serve on the Finance Committee, indicated that procurement irregularities and corruption is very, and I hesitate to use the widespread, but he said it is extensive, or let's put it that way. So let's not kill ourselves. There is an issue in our nation. Other institutions, the Accountant General, the Public Protector, they've all indicated that we do suffer, we have a problem of corruption and irregular expenditure in the nation. And I think that I'm trying to endeavour that we do not move away from that idea. I don't want to portray a negative portrayal in the media at all, but I think it is an issue that the NPA is also aware of, and that is why we have the attention that is given by the asset forfeiture unit and the SIU. So it's never my image to present a negative image of the country, but I think we need to face realities as well. But it depends on how you gauge what is widespread or not. The fact is, if we look at 30 billion rand a year, that is quite a significant figure. But thank you, Chair. I appreciate your comments as well.
I must actually thank you for clarifying, Senator, because you are referring to wasted expenditure, misconduct, irregularities in procurement, and Dr. Ramake, you will agree that this don't fall within your definition of corruption.
Yeah, look, one doesn't want to get into that. You see, the difficulty with other prosecutors is you can only determine, and corruption has actually now been fairly narrowly and beautifully described in the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act. There may very well be grey areas. In fact, some of those incidents, there may very well be. But the difficulty that one has, other than those anecdotes, and those are some things that I, as a prosecutor, would shy away from, because we can only decide on what has been presented to us. Corruption, in the context of JCPS, is as defined in the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act, and that's how we take it. Ours is to enforce the law as it is.
And maybe also we should allow the public to debate if they want to debate about corruption, take other views as to what it means. That is their issue. But you are guided by the law, and we are interested in what the law says in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, on the issue of corruption, it is in the original slide 41-42, it indicated that only 21 people were convicted of corruption in excess of 5 million rand. And in terms of the explanation, it stated that a number of cases have been enrolled but not yet finalized. So it would be good maybe if the committee can get some figures as to the ongoing cases, also to enable us to gauge whether there is sufficient engagement by the NPA with the issue. Then secondly, Chair, the NPA comments positively that indeed fewer withdrawals was affected by prosecutors in our courts, but I think that must be read in conjunction with the fact that 1,216 more matters were struck off the roll during the financial year. Just in terms of practicalities, it is of course much more negative, more of an indictment against the NPA when a presiding officer decides to strike a matter of the roll. So I would like the NPA to comment on what the correlation is between the reduced in numbers of withdrawals in comparison to the increase in matters being struck of the roll. Then, Chair, in terms of the witness protection, we know that there was previously issued first in 2002 and then again in 2007 SIU proclamations for investigations in terms of what I think one can maybe say allegations of abuse of assets of the witness protection unit by officials. So I would like to inquire from the NPA what steps they have taken to strengthen control of the assets and infrastructure of the witness protection unit to prevent a recurrence of the events that led to the two proclamations. Then, Chair, maybe in follow-up to what the Honourable Self asked in terms of success, I must agree with the Honourable Swart that in terms of the maintenance numbers finalised, it reads quite well. My concern is, however, that given the fact that at best maintenance, in practice, maintenance cases is sort of a quasi-criminal type of affair, I would argue that this is a typical type of case where internal control in respect of turnaround times and the quality of service rendered by the officials must be measured in some way. Out there in our constituencies, despite the fact that the figures indicate a better completion rate, we are still, I think, on a regular basis confronted by allegations that the assistance people get in maintenance courts are not up to standard. So the question is really in respect of quality control in the maintenance court. Then, Chair, in terms of also, it was already referred to the public trust in the NPA. There were also the other highly publicized case of, I think, what's colloquially known as the Chup-Chup case. And in that case, there was obviously first the conviction on a charge of murder after a death following a motor vehicle crash, which was then overturned on appeal to one culpable homicide. My understanding is that at some stage the NPA decided that all cases which followed from a death resulting from motor vehicle crashes or collisions or incidents must be followed by a charge of murder. You have already referred to that quite possibly the public must be allowed to debate. The fact is that following the overturn on appeal, there was quite a lot of negative sentiment towards the NPA in respect of the decision to charge murder. So I would like to know whether that directive still stands, whether it would be less suited in terms of the public trust to deal with each case on its own merits. And then lastly, Chair, we, I think, have heard quite a number of input in terms of the independence of the NPA. I would like to add my voice to say that independence, obviously, in terms of our constitutional framework is a good thing. And if the bill can come here, that can assist the NPA. But there's the other side to that point as well, when you talk about issues of trust of the public, the image of the institution and the integrity of the institution, which is all part of what one would see, like to see from an independent institution. And having said that, we are obviously as a committee and the public well aware of the scathing comment made by our judiciary and not the low benches against the two senior deputy directors. So the question in terms of maintaining public trust is what steps have the NPA itself taken to address the concern raised by the course. Obviously, this is a disciplinary matter, but given the fact that these are the senior officials, I think the public at least is entitled to know what steps the NP has taken to address the concerns raised by the court. Thank you.
Well, you are raising a very interesting question of public trust, because if you take a Pistorius case, some sections of the public had already sentenced him to found him guilty of committing murder, and right now, before the sentence is handed down, others already sentenced him to a prison term. Now, the same thing can be said about the public, the public prosecution, because there are things that, as the public, we think should happen, but these things are governed by the law, and those that apply the law feel that to let things happen as the public wants, they will be contrary to the law. Now, can we say, therefore, in such cases, we must be guided by the public opinion or by the law? The Honourable Lords.
Okay, if you want me to respond, I'm obviously not the one in, to answer these questions, but I will just submit to you that if the Constitution itself calls for the NDA to act without fear, favour or prejudice, and in application of the law, obviously, that if that is what is done, it will enhance public trust. The difficulty, as I say, referring to the YouTube matter, is that without preempting their response, from a legal point of view, it from the beginning was difficult to see how you can maybe get to a finding of dollars eventualis, given the fact that this guy raced in the street. The doctor already indicated that maybe that's discussions for another day. My comment is just to say that if you want to strengthen your institutional independence, you must also seem to apply the law without fear, favor, or prejudice in order not to lose the trust of the public.
Advocate Mason. Thank you, Honorable Ayot.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will hand over to Dr. Ranai to deal with the withdrawals vis-à-vis the struck of matters.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question was the correlation, whether there is or whether there isn't correlation between withdrawals, fewer withdrawals, and the fact that there appears to be an increase in cases that are being struck of the law. I think the distinction here is important because with respect to withdrawals, that's something that's within the control of the prosecutor. And we have encouraged prosecutors to make sure that they only enroll cases that are trial ready so as to avoid more withdrawals. Because in the past we used to have more withdrawals, which meant that prosecutors were enrolling cases that were not ready, or cases in fact where there were no prospects of a successful prosecution. Now, with respect to cases that are struck off the roll, and the increase would mainly be in respect of older cases that shouldn't actually have been on the rolls or were not trial ready. One may need to look into it. I doubt if it will be in respect of newer cases. Because we still have those old cases which simply have been there on the roll until ultimately the court decides to strike them. It may very well be that because we have actually discouraged the withdrawal of cases and to insist on cases being on cases being ready for the court rolls. It may very well be that there are some prosecutors who are kind of clinging to the older cases to the extent that ultimately they have to be struck off the roll. But I don't think that the margin, we haven't looked at the position in previous years with respect to cases that are being struck off the roll, but I doubt if there will be a very wide margin. But we will keep check of that. I can assure you that
The prosecutors are now more and more beginning to screen their cases properly to make sure that only cases that are trial ready are on the court floor, as well as cases where we have prospects of successful prosecution.
Yes. The chair, I only hand over to Advocate Mukhatsa to deal with the other questions.
Thank you very much. There was a question around the statistics as to how many cases are on the roll, which are output 3. As at September, there were 57 cases already. If you minus 2 convictions of 6th October, that gives us 7 cases on roll. It may be less if I've counted also the ones that we have gained convictions on during this period. Thank you. Around the maintenance matters, yes, it is a concern. We do receive presentations from people as well that they're not getting the proper service on the maintenance court. It's something that we're looking into. The prosecutors that are employed the maintenance court, some of them are coming from the Department of Justice, some of them are from the NPA. So we're busy doing a review process, which will then also answer the question that came on earlier as to what is it that is being done in order to improve either the inflow of cases and sexual offences in the reporting thereof. So that is an exercise that is a complete exercise that is looking at sexual offences, that is also looking at the maintenance matters. So that review process is probably going to be finalised by the end of this month, of which we're going to give a report then to the NDPP. It is a question that has come up with in EXCO meetings. It's a question that has also come up from our Ministry of Justice. Thank you.
CEO, can you deal with the question of the official of the Witness Protection Unit, unit that is of asset?
That is reportedly referred to weren't such assets of the organization. It was the leased premises. They didn't buy the premises. They were premises that were leased rented, in other words, that were being used not necessarily for the filing. The allegations were that they were used not necessarily for witnesses, but for personal use by certain individuals. Since then, at that stage, the CEO did not have delegations to actually deal with OWP. He has given those delegations for the past 3 years. So I'm basically hunting for that, and we have regular meetings with them. This is an area which is always open, and it's a high-risk environment. Witness protection itself is a high-risk environment. Anything that has covert attached to it becomes a high-risk environment and needs to be monitored very closely. So in terms of that whole leasing process, there were also questions relating to rotation of leases, whether there were any individuals benefiting from those leases, etc. So we have it in processes which the auditor general is satisfied with those processes and controls. They were part of the team that we've obtained. But it's an ongoing process. It's something that when you work in an autonomous, high-risk, college environment, you have to have very close monitoring and reviewing them effectively.
Chair, just from my side, steps taken by NPA to address the public trust as a result of the scathing comments made by the courts. As you know, in terms of Audial Grand Parter, I had to address letters to the officials concerned and invite their comments, and the matter is receiving attention. The comments are being awaited.
Thank you, Chair. Just to commend you for the report. Very good report, a clean audit. Much appreciated. But my comment actually also falls from the comment that the Honourable Mayor made about the allegation around widespread corruption, which is something that you really dealing with as a country. Because of that perception that there is corruption in government departments. And we need to start working on this in a way that says, yes, there is corruption, and we need to know what we're doing about it. Because if we're going to live in a situation where there's always assumptions about corruption in government, we actually have a problem in the country. And this is why when you come to the World Competitive Index, you find that you're being downgraded because of this alleged corruption. And that's supposed to be prevalent within government departments. But when you come here, we don't see demonstration of it. And maybe my plea to you is that moving forward into the future, what you need to do when you present before us is to actually come up with a system that helps interrogate the figures. You should disintegrate the statistics But we actually understand when it comes to a femicide, this is how many cases you had, that this is how they were concluded. When it comes to, for example, peddling drugs, because you know drug addiction also is a problem in country. We need to know how you're doing and how cases are actually concluded. It's sending a clear message that South Africa is actually declaring war against drugs. When it comes to the trio, you call it trio crime, how you're actually finding the outcome to be. So whatever report that you have can actually talk to what you intend doing more. Because for now, if you come and you say, these were our targets and these are just the numbers, but these numbers are not really helping us to really get to understand that whether what we are doing is really making impact. You know, at the end day, when you look at the figures, your target was 60, now you've managed to come up with 62. It look like, you know, you're making impact, but if you don't actually do this with a style that is in depth, maybe also looking at how long the cases are taking in court, to connect it to the outcomes of court. Public opinion, the level of public opinion, does it actually influence the court outcomes? For now, the comparison that's actually been made is the Osaka Soldiers case, the Duke case, whether that was actually a capable homicide or murder, whether there was any intent to make a dollar signature eventually that has been made. So basically, we need to manage to have reports that actually give a clear picture of what is happening when it comes to the area of prosecution. And then it will actually then help to dispel what is myth, what we cannot continue to live with this myth. And this myth about crime and corruption in South Africa, once and for all, we need to deal with it. We need to know we are a corrupt country, if we are a corrupt country. If we're not a corrupt country, the myth must actually be removed. And we know we're not saying that South Africa is a clean country. There's no crime that's taking place, but it will be unfair to general South Africans. We find that everybody is actually being painted with the same brush, based on no information. Another thing is when it comes to maintenance cases, I think what is important is to really also look at something that we've been advocating for, even from the side of the Department of Justice, to say that can you look at the way of actually restricting movement of defaulters? Because there are a lot of defaulters. Some of them very well-to-do people that do not just simply pay maintenance, and maybe for no reason. The way of actually fighting with a partner. So if you could look at possibility of, if somebody goes go to the airport and you know that it's not paid maintenance, should be asked before they actually embark on the international trip to go and pay maintenance. Maybe that can actually help facilitate processes. And then also, there is a complaint that there's a lot of women who actually find themselves in court having to actually face defaulters who are men who come to court with lawyers when themselves not represented, and may not be represented because they don't qualify for legal aid. And because of the fact that they have this burden of actually looking after the family, they do not have money when solicit the service of their lawyer. So please look into that area and how we can think it. When Legal Aid South Africa was here, we brought the letter before them. They are quite really aware of it. They will also be assisting to deal with this matter in a way they're going to really assist us. You've indicated that you now have four children who were diabetic in 2013 and 14 as compared to 2012-2013. But you know what it actually has done is to lead to a situation of increased number of children who are remanded in prison. If you can indicate as to how you are actually helping to deal this matter. Already some of my colleagues have actually indicated that we have about 43,000 remand detainees in South African prison, which is a problem that we need to really look at. And one of the things that has actually been brought to the fore when the Correctional Services Department was here was that it's because of the court rules. And the court rules sometimes are saying it's because of lack of, we don't have enough medicines. In some cases, it's availability of the prosecution service. In some cases, it's availability of legal aid. So I don't know at that level as to how you're actually dealing with it. If you have already started dealing with it, can you really advise as to how the matter is actually being addressed? the issue of independence, I just want to caution us to say that we keep on, not only you who come here and you talk about independence, everybody in South Africa wants to be independent. And I was right at the beginning, the independence especially given to institutions like Chapter 9 institutions, because they were going to almost like be the police to watch and protect the constitution. But for now, every institution that comes before us, they want to become independent. And I just want to caution us so that we don't actually create a system where we're making service. Because even now, when I'm talking about the portfolio, I'm talking about coordination. Because independence should not actually say, send a message that you need to work in silos. Otherwise, you're going to find that you are at parallel all the time. Nothing comes together. And in that way, we cannot be in the position to really manage to make any progress when it comes to the major responsibilities that you've got to deal with in the country. Thank you very much.
I think when you deal with this question, we really need to link independence to accountability. Because even in respect of Chapter 9 institutions, we say they are independent, but they are accountable. So there is a tendency to link independence and accountability. And that creates a problem, because we are a constitutional state, and the different parts are interconnected, they are intertwined, they are checked and balances, and so on. Maybe Dr. Ramaiti, you people must help the public and ourselves understand some of these concepts before we take them too far. You know, for instance, now the situation where perceptions of corruption becomes corrupt, and that's why the numbers of corrupt people and officials is so high, because perceptions are enough. I don't know whether it's not possible, but you from time to time provide statistics of people charged with corruption, and statistics telling us how many people have been convicted, how many have been discharged. Because unless we have something like that, then the whole country is corrupt, and that affects the image of the country before the world and before our people. Next time when you want people to go and vote, why do you expect them to go and vote for all these corrupt people? So I think we must really begin to say things if there are facts to back things that we say, other than just generalize through and through. I apply to the question and leave this observation aside.
Chair, I don't know if I understood the honourable member correctly, whether she was making comments or there was a question.
Somewhere there were questions, somewhere just comments. Like for example, when I asked about the whole issue of remand behaviors, I wanted to know what you're doing at Cluster Delivery. Because you know, sometimes you'll be told that, you know, we have so many remand behaviors because of the court rules. And court rules has got implications in terms of availability of the magistrates, of the prosecutors, of legal aid, all of this. So and I wanted to know, at Cluster level, do you engage on issues of this nature? And if yes, maybe give an answer. And some of it, when it comes to maintenance, for example, I've recommended restriction of movement, which is something that you can go and get. And then I actually say, when it comes to statistics, really, if you can actually try by all means to make the statistics articulate the challenges that you've got, because it's very going to help you moving forward when you actually structure your plan in future. Because now you have actually contextualized what is the real situation in terms of the number of issues in South Africa. I've mentioned things like, I've mentioned that lately, and the deal of crime, for example, those are just examples. So basically, what's just important is that, because you know the public opinion sometimes in South Africa, we decide that people might start thinking, believing or not believing in God, because of the outcomes of those courts. But it's yourself who is leading the processes. It's yourself who makes the statements. Especially also, we have said all of us on corruption. Crime and corruption. Because for now, there is a decision that there is crime and corruption in South Africa. Who is corrupt? Are you saying to us that you are not in the position to deal with this? And if you can't deal with it, where is the information? Show us and give us a clear demonstration of what you found in government departments that justifies the statements about what happened in South Africa. That you would actually say, this is what we want, and this is how we have dealt with it. And if it's not there, we need to be in the position as a country to spell the need of corruption, because it actually harms us as a country. And I've mentioned the global competitive index. That half the time you find that we are actually rated. We are rated low because of, you know, sentiments and allegations of this nature.
Advocate, the honorable members are not just supposed to answer questions. They have got to be for advice. So note the advice, the observations. Honorable Reverend Mitch.
Thank you, Chairperson. I first would like to start off by thanking the NPA and blaming them for what, from my perspective, is a good year and incredible improvement in performance. And I think it's on the back of a very difficult time, 5 years, in which there was incredible uncertainty about the office of the NDPP. And I think the fact that they've been, for at least some part of this year, an appointed NDPP, shows that it does have the ability to boost morale and lead to improve performance, as well as, you know, commitment from senior management. But that will last remain to be seen, given the uncertainty that exists today in this position. On the subject of independence, I'd just like to make a brief comment to not necessarily assist the NPA, because I think they understand, but the independence when it comes to the prosecution or prosecuting authority is not a nice to have. It's not something that is new or fancy. I think we saw an extensive debate in this in which the Constitutional Court advised us on the independence of the prosecution. And we saw the last non-acting NDPP removed from office as a result of that judgment. So I think it's when we talk about independence of the prosecution or prosecuting authority, we come out of a history where prosecution was arbitrary, where anyone who was perceived to be a threat to the state could have been prosecuted. So let us not lose sight of that, and I think prosecutorial independence is the cornerstone of our democracy. Having said that, I would like to have just some indication on, you know, the annual report talks about 11 million rand in staff debt, of which 4 million of it is older than 3 years. What is being done to recover that, and how does a situation arise where staff debt is at 4 million rand older than 3 years? Also, the second question relates to the Prevention and Combating of Torture Act, which was recently enacted. Just two simple questions, whether prosecutors have been trained in the provisions of this Act, and have any cases been brought to the NPA for under the provisions of this Act? As a follow-up to Mr. Warren's question on the three of the senior prosecutors that have been referred to the bar for unethical behavior. In his legal opinion, Advocate Ellis advised the NDPP that all of these should be suspended pending investigation of the fitness of their office. And I know that this is a disciplinary matter, because it is a disciplinary matter, there are grounds or provisions made for suspension. Unfortunately, in this case, suspension has to be approved, if you will, by the President and the Minister, or the Minister in the case of the Director. I understand that there has been a request made to the Executive for the suspension, and I would like to believe that there's a level of urgency for this, because the three prosecutors continuing in a position, especially given the fact that the judgment was released in relation to the performance of their functions, in which they declined to prosecute or withdrew a prosecution, it's an urgent issue. So my question then is, what is the status of the request of the President, and whether it has been said, clearly hasn't been agreed to, because there's two of them sitting here. What is the status of the investigation, and what is the correspondence with the President and Minister with regard to the request for their suspension? Thank you.
Is it really fair to say that if matters have been referred to the President and the Minister for consideration and decision, that you can expect the officials to monitor progress or check with the President or the Minister what they are doing with these matters and when they are going to deal with this matter?
Let me then rephrase the question. On what date was a request for suspension submitted to the Minister and the President? And then we can make our conclusion from that. Thank you.
Advocate Minister, when you respond to Honourable Freer and Mate, also respond to the issues raised by Honorable Majaki, and then we can close the matter.
To the question with respect to remand detainees in particular, and the view that this is as a result of burden controls. The problem, I think we have dealt with this somewhere in our presentation. The problem is not so much with the prosecutors. The problem is with the system that is currently applied, which is called case flow management, in terms of which the cases that can be enrolled on a certain day and when they can be enrolled is actually determined by the presiding officers. We haven't had a look at how the case flow management system actually impacts on the remand detainees. And as I understand you are saying that this has resulted in an increased number of remand detainees. That's something that obviously we will have to look into. And it becomes more worrying when we hear that in fact there's an increase in remand detainees who are children. And as you said, I look back at my colleagues, and I do believe that that's something that we will definitely need to look into. There may very well be a correlation, but something that we will definitely need to look into. Jefferson, you mentioned the issue of accountability and independence. The difficulty with these things is if you try to explain them to someone, it becomes very difficult. But for those of us who actually practice these things, we do understand them. We know what independence is. We know what accountability is. As I understand our constitution, we are fully accountable to this honorable house. In fact, we do this for the public which we represent. Therefore, there is no way that we can refuse to account. In any event, the courts have also said that prosecutors are accountable for their decisions. But when it comes to independence, we know what it means because we know that we have to take decisions independently, but we have to account for those decisions. And that's my understanding of it.
Members, the problem with lawyers is if you approach 100 lawyers for legal opinions, you may get 100 legal opinions. So if you have one legal opinion which is suspend people, and then you suspend, after suspending them, another legal opinion comes and says that the first one was wrong. So we shouldn't rush to say, if there's a legal opinion which says president or minister suspends, that legal opinion is conclusive. So let's allow those who have authority to act to take their time and make sure that they don't take wrong decisions because of lawyers, because lawyers are very creative people, and sometimes they create opinions which are not valid themselves. Is there still anything can I ask you? I think you'll be the last one.
Just suddenly the question of staffing. In fact, we as you know, we came from an era where we were displaying, so there were a lot of things in the organisation that weren't exactly 100% right. So we've had a huge cleanup project, as you can see, get to us with deals. And part of it was to deal with the recovery or write-off of staff in the cases where it was the right to do so, and we had advice from the territory to do so in fact. So there is on average 3 million rand of it that is taken on. Now that might sound like a lot of money, but we couldn't stop like it's 2.2 billion rand. And the staff debt that we're talking about relates to people having bursaries, and then they don't pass, and then he has to recover the debt from them. We have other people who start to get salary overpayments, but if the organization becomes a bit more difficult, you've got to be in prison, you've got to go through a whole civil case. But it might sound like a lot of money to the public, 3 million men, but you've got to see it in the context of the whole organization. And I want to give you the assurance that we really aggressively have had a staff debt. Where there is fruitless and wasted expenditure, where somebody had no show of a hotel, that gets recovered from salaries immediately. You lose a laptop, we do an investigation, we find you responsible, we recover from you immediately. We also then allow people to pay off if they want, because some people have car accidents, that's also part of staff debt, and found that that person was guilty. And if you're 70 or 100,000 men, you can never have had it in one go. You have to be fair to your staff, you have to pay it off. Then it results in staff debt being there. So I just want to leave the committee with the assurance that this is something we regard in serious life. We actually monitor the performance of that individual on how he can bring down that staff debt. So he cannot get scored well in his individual performance if he actually manages that. And so it builds up his credit and obviously ultimately value. So we're not worried about being excessive in the organization. It's definitely not out of control.
CEO, our advice would be that if the people who breach the disciplinary code charge them. But the fact that some people have to face disciplinary action doesn't mean that there's something wrong with the institution called the NPA. And I think from your report it's quite clear that you know what you're doing your work well, and continue on that path. And thank you very much. Join us at 2:30, so enjoy your lunch, and please don't forget to gather in the system that is empty. Lunch outside.